Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. Last team here in the AFC South. Getting pretty close, which means the season's getting closer. We are on a team in Tennessee who I think has a lot of questions. And honestly, like, I could see this team changing substantially in the next 12 to 24 months in a way that I mean, maybe Minnesota could do something similar. Maybe there's a retirement or something like that. But I could really see this team transforming in ways that might be unexpected. So I think this is a really interesting team to watch because I think they play very close to, you know, right on the razor's edge. And if that sort of goes south, I think that can go south quickly. And the reaction to that could be kind of swift. I don't think it's a coaching thing or anything like that. I just think, you know, I think this is a team that's a middle of the road team, slightly better than that. And I think they've maybe lived a lot better than that. And if they come back to earth in some of those things, I think that they could be all of a sudden a lot worse than we expect. So, And Tannehill doesn't have any guaranteed money left. You know, Derrick Henry's kind of getting into, you know, it could be a steep, like, he could be a Todd Gurley candidate. We'll talk about that in a minute here. But he could be a candidate of a guy who was dominant and then shortly thereafter it was gone. I'm not saying that's the likeliest outcome, but I think it's certainly a possible one. So we'll do the summary here in 2021. Again, that was the first year post Arthur Smith. 63.8 plays per game. That was good for 12th. 35.4 dropbacks per game. That was good for 25th. 28.4 design rushes per game. That was second in the league. You add that all up. 52.6 designed rush rate, that is good for 29th. 52.6 designed pass rate, that's good for the 29th highest. So again, really run heavy, skewing slow, 29.2 seconds per play. They did a lot of stuff. And again, I think if you were to sort of point to this, like, they do some smart stuff, right? Fifth in terms of pass attempts in the medium depth, that's 10 to 19 yards. That's the most efficient way to throw the ball, right? So they sort of, I'm not going to say they cheat, but they sort of get the ball in the pass game where they need to get it. Touchdown rate, that's really one of the first times in Tannehill's Tennessee tenure it was like league average at 4.1. We'll get to that in a second. 7.8% sack rate, that's good for sixth highest. So sacked a bunch, and really it wasn't really their offensive line's problem. So I think that's an interesting thing there with Tannehill. 3.3% sack rate. 3.3% scramble rate, excuse me. You add that up, that's an 11.1%, you know, leak rate or spillage rate, whatever. That's good for 11th. So again, it's low passing volume generally, and they're eroding that number at a higher rate than the league. So that's tough sledding in the passing game. 159 play action attempts. They ran that on 29.7% of their plays. That was sixth most in terms of their pass attempts that were play action. Again, they were better at it than, you know, they were above the median in terms of improvement as well. So what do? They run a lot of highly efficient stuff and they're better at it. You know, and they sort of get a lot out of it. I think that's the easiest way to say it. 30th in terms of halfback routes per dropback. They were 17th in terms of halfback targets per dropback. So that's an interesting split there. Much more voluminous target volume than actual route volume, which I think is notable. 28th in terms of wide receiver routes per dropback. They ranked 21st in terms of wide receiver targets. 20th in terms of tight end routes, 16th in terms of tight end targets. Anthony Firkser didn't come through for me last year. It was a pretty big bummer. 12th in terms of red zone plays, right about the median. So they're 15th in red zone rush rate, 14th in red zone running back rush rate. So again, there's some good stuff there for Tannehill. Again, we'll get to him in a second in terms of specific expectation. But you look, expected points for the running back position, 26.7. That's good for third. Wide receiver, 33.2. That is 18th. Tight end is 11.9. That is 15th. PFF pass block rate. Again, the thing about the sack rate is kind of interesting. It's sixth highest. They were the second best pass blocking graded unit in the league last year. So that's a something that I wouldn't have expected based on that rate. Again, they were 11th in terms of run blocking grade as an offensive line. So well above the league average and the league median in terms of their blocking. Tannehill was expected for 30.8 touchdowns and he scored 21. So again, it's a really high expectation in terms of how he's getting his usage and all that. He made up for some of that with 4.7 rushing touchdowns expected and he scored 7. So when you look at it, it's about 35 touchdowns he was expected for. He scored 28 total. So that's, again, that's unique for Tannehill. Tannehill tends to overperform in the expectation and have a really high expectation in terms of touchdowns, just in the way that he's used. But that actually let down last year. So he's expected for points per game 13. He scored points per game 17 last year. So I think that's a bit of a surprise. When you look at some of his other stuff here, you know, he's one that I don't think that Malik Willis is a threat, but contract wise they're kind of running up against him. Next year will be his last year under contract and he's not guaranteed any money left. So you know, that'll be something I think we need to watch. Last year was basically his worst year PFF wise in terms of PFF grade. It was his worst year in Tennessee, that is, over the last 3 years. It was his worst year in terms of interceptions. Again, it was the most passing attempts he's had since 2015. And again, this is just to give you an idea of how different Ryan Tannehill's career is, this is a better PFF grade than at anything he had done in Miami. So that's like his third best season in Tennessee. And that's better than anything he did in Miami, which I think it's notable. Another interesting thing that was found just when looking at his, like, he cratered. He fell off, just totally fell off. 318 dropbacks in 2018. That was the year coming off the ACL. 40.2 PFF passing grade, just dismal. So turnover-worthy play rate almost twice as high as his league average or his career average. Just total rebound. It's crazy how well he rebounded. It's a super rare thing. Last year was the lowest ADOT of his career as well, so that's notable as well there. So we'll see. I mean, I don't think things are getting better for him relative to losing A.J. Brown. I know they bring in Robert Woods, and that's good. Like, he's helpful, but A.J. Brown's like one of the best, most efficient wide receivers in football. So we'll see how that goes. Again, there's some stuff with him that leaves me wondering a little bit with what's going on. You know, is he eroding? 22.7% of his pressures he was sacked on. That's above his career high. Last year in 2020, he was very, very low in that stat. And then in 2019, he was actually high in that stat. So again, he sort of has regressed basically back to his mean last year. I don't know if that middle year there in Tennessee and Miami, those 2 years in 2018, 2019, if he just wasn't healthy or what was going on. But now he's sort of slipping back towards some of those ways. So I think it's a really interesting thing we'll see there with him if he's starting to age, if that's a little bit of the problem that we have there with him. Again, lower ADOT, taking pressures and turning him into sacks at a higher rate. So we'll be watching for that. Again, last year was his lowest time to throw as well. So blocked a ton, blocked really well. And short time to throw, short ADOT, lots of sacks. Like, that's not a positive direction for which you want your quarterback to be going. So I'm just curious on that. Again, I don't know how he massively performs expectation either. So you look at some other guys, I think they could. I'm not necessarily sure with Tannehill. All right, let's turn over to the running backs, and I have some questions and concerns about Derrick Henry. When you look at Derrick Henry's performance in his career, you see, that this is actually last year. People got so enamored with him, with his performance, and it was good from a fantasy production perspective, no doubt. No doubt about that. 10 touchdowns. He played 8 games, right? I mean, he was averaging well over 100 yards a game. He had 937, right, on 219 attempts in 8 games. I mean, just a mammoth volume. But that's what it was, mammoth volume, not efficiency. I don't really believe in yards per carry as an indicator, but if you're sort of into that thing, it was the second lowest of his career. It was only other, the other lowest one was the 2017 season. Again, I don't think it's super useful as a statistic. Yards after contact, it was his lowest since 2017. I believe that one a little bit more. One of the things I really like to look at is the amount of carries that it takes for you to force a missed tackle. And that would be, you want them to be fewer carries, right? A good running back will break a tackle maybe once every 4 carries. Like, that's a pretty good clip. Henry's done a good job of breaking them. When you go back, it was in his 2020 season, it was just over once every 5 carries. 2019, it was 5.2 carries. 2018, it was 4.8. This year it was 6.8. So again, you're really going in the wrong direction on that. It's a pretty steep drop off. He's well below expectation with his rushing yards as well. So you can sort of keep going down this rabbit hole on him. When you look again, it was the second lowest. It's basically the lowest since 2018 in terms of his yards that came on breakaway runs, which is a sign of, running, basically breaking off big plays. There's some limitation there. And again, with the force missed tackles, right? If you're breaking more of them, you have a bigger chance to sort of reel off bigger plays. It's kind of how those plays happen. So there's probably some correlation there as well. But when you look at some of the PFF metrics, again, like elusive rate, the worst of his career. So I have some pause about him going forward. Now, if you're going to pound Derrick Henry 23 times a game and he can stay healthy, he's going to be an elite fantasy scorer. But if this is sort of a sign of, hey, he is wearing down after a total of 1,401 attempts, and basically it was 378 and 303 the past 2 years, and hey, maybe he's wearing down, and it's at 28 years old, he will be 28 years old. Like, the end is kind of coming, right? That's to think that Derrick Henry is entering the back end of his career shouldn't be super surprising. And last year might have been a bigger indicator of it than I think people expect. So I would just be sort of careful on that. I am investing in some backup stuff. I'm recording this on Thursday night to be released for Friday morning. I know that there was some news in terms of Hassan Haskins and Julius Chestnut being guys that were playing in the game. I don't think the game's over as I'm actually recording this. It's embarrassing that I don't know that. It did finish. Okay. Julius Chestnut had 7 carries. Hassan Haskins actually had 6. So Julius Chestnut may be a guy. I don't know the depth of your leagues, but he might be a guy to pay some attention to. I know that he got the first cracks in this game as well. So that could be a changing situation backfield wise for this backfield. Hassan Haskins is a guy that we liked. Julius Chestnut, a little bit further off the radar, coming from Sacred Heart, and coming a little bit further off the radar, especially with no draft pedigree. So we'll be watching for that backup situation for sure. And they could be in the market for someone as well. So none of that would super surprise me. The receiving core, again, the loss of A.J. Brown is big. The addition of Treylon Burks, who's really struggled in camp. I think that's an understatement. I will say this. I think we shouldn't take from last year that because a rookie struggles that he is destined for a breakout or that it doesn't matter, right? I think you can struggle for different ways, right? I think that if you go and look at the information that we get, you know, one of the things that we say is don't double count, right? Well, one of the questions that we had coming out was, and this has popped up, it's been a thing, very much, is that part of the reason why Treylon Burks fell so much was because there was some work ethic concerns, right? And he wasn't in shape, and then he comes in and I don't even pretend to be able to know this, but there's people that do this, and when you look at his the news was, or the analysis, I guess you would say, is that he didn't have the body of someone that actually stayed in shape. Like, he looked good, but he looked like he was carrying a little extra baggage. And then he comes in camp over the summer, and he's struggling to practice through it. And now he's struggling again in training camp. It's vastly different than struggling to catch the ball. Like, those are very different things. It's a preparedness issue. It's an in shape issue. Those are different than being, you know, struggling with actually performing, right? I think those are different things. Concentration issues, confidence issues, right? I mean, that's not, we see this with other things too, right? Just think of like golf, right? Like, you can have a golfer who's really well practiced and just totally shot in terms of, he's coming prepared, and he's everything. He's just shot in terms of his confidence, right? Those are two vastly different things, as opposed to someone who, you know, hasn't picked up a club and is going to go out and just hack it around, right? Those are two very different things in terms of what you would expect for them going forward. So I'm a little bit cautious on Treylon Burks because this mirrors a lot of some of the concerns that we heard about pre-draft. So that gives me a little bit of pause. Again, I'm not making super big bets on receivers other than to sort of take them cheap is kind of my suggestion. Robert Woods, I think, is one that could benefit. The other one that I think is really interesting play is actually Austin Hooper. And I don't think Austin Hooper is like a bad player. I think he's actually a pretty good player. And I think some of it was volume related. And I don't think maybe he came out with like the biggest, he's a good player. He got paid kind of like he was a great player. I think he's a pretty good player, right? He's did well in Atlanta. He did fine in Cleveland. I think it was lower volume. He is going to get a better opportunity here for sure. In a pretty open situation, right? So, I am officially interested in him deeper down the line in terms of especially tight end premiums and the like there, because I think that's a situation that could actually, you know, kind of pay off. When you look at him, for example, last year it was at 1.14 yards per route run. That's pretty low. When you look in 2020, he was actually at 1.43. And when he was actually in Atlanta, his last season in Atlanta was 1.65. So again, not elite. He's been a 1.39 guy his entire career. That's his average. He was in the low 1.3s for his first 3 years, had that breakout year in year four, and then has kind of come back. He's basically been essentially, I mean, if you just, he's regressed basically back to his median. If you take the last 2 years and add them up, right, he's right back to where he sort of was with that outlier Atlanta season. So I'll just say, I mean, I think if he's going to get the crack at having his most career routes is 492. And that was on 579 pass plays, right? So I think this is a team that could maybe need to pass the ball a little bit more. And you just look like 2019, for example, and you look at, even 2018, if you take a look at it, it's 71, 660, and 4. And again, that's kind of like the median season, I would say, or pretty close to the median season there for Hooper. He's played in 6 seasons. So I don't think that that's, you know, you sort of look at kind of side eye the numbers there for Tennessee, and I don't think that's a super unreasonable possibility, right? So again, I don't think a ton of people are talking about him either, because it feels like he's coming off kind of a down year. Again, he'll be 28 in October, so we're not talking about a young player. But again, we're not talking about one that's old either. I mean, this is his seventh season. He came in young. That's the benefit of coming in at 21, 22 years old versus coming in at 24, right? So I'm interested in Hooper deeper down the line. We'll talk about him a little bit more here in a second when we get into the cost aspects of it. And we'll start with the quarterback position. And we've got Tannehill. He's pretty neutral. Underdog 25, RDP 26. So there's probably a little bit of long-term value there, I would think. You know, you just look at some of the guys in front of him. Again, I say that, and I also think at the same time, yeah, it's a spot where you have to be careful making long-term bets, right? That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is, I don't know. I wonder what a next act of a lot of these guys looks like. You know, what's the next act of Baker, of Carson Wentz, of Goff? That's basically 26 through 30. And that's not separated far from a guy like Marcus Mariota. Again, I think Goff, Baker is a little bit more debatable. I guess Tannehill has shown better than Mariota. But you start thinking about those guys, and again, then it's, all right, him or Daniel Jones, right? Like, or him or Jameis Winston's going a little bit ahead of him. Like, it's a really interesting tier when you start trying to pick between those guys. I think like a clear bet is Jameis Winston. But honestly, if we found out in 18 months that Tannehill, Daniel Jones, Baker, Wentz, Goff, Trubisky, Mariota, those guys in that range, Jimmy Garoppolo, if more of them than not, or all of them, weren't starters, that wouldn't be terribly surprising. And that's a place where it's such an edge to have a rookie quarterback on a rookie deal, like a good quarterback on a rookie deal, such a benefit that I don't know if the NFL's caught up to that or not. In sort of the willingness to sort of press those chips all the way into the middle of the table, and do what it takes to get that player. And maybe in that world of that hesitancy, you might see guys like Tannehill and these other guys sort of play and have you know, starting tracks that maybe should go on longer than is maybe optimal. And I think Tannehill's one of the better ones of that. But that's a nagging question that I have. You know, is the optimal play, you know, and Matt Ryan's he's just a different level than this. And I think, you know, Cousins and Tannehill in this type of range are an interesting debate too. Are they much different, right? I mean, you can parse numbers and you know, they look similar and have similar ages. And why are they going, you know, 4 or 5 rounds apart, right? That's not... I think that's almost entirely situation, right? But you start thinking about these and I have interest in how this next 3-4 years goes in terms of the quarterback angle, because I think it might be a guide for maybe some of the future. So that's a little bit of the hangup I have on Tannehill, right? And again, I think I'd rather take a shot on a guy like Jameis Winston ahead of him, just because I think his range of outcomes is... he has a higher ceiling in his range of outcomes. I think that's the bet you want to pay off. Like, I wouldn't want to roster Tannehill as a third necessarily behind. You know, you could do it if he's a third and you sort of need like a stable guy this year. But if you're trying to take a swing for the fence, like, you want to take a shot on a guy like Jameis Winston. So that would sort of be my thought there. Again, it probably depends a little bit on what you're trying to accomplish with that quarterback three as well. All right, Malik Willis, again, he's got an RDP of 31. He's a hard pass for me there. Here's one I think is actually interesting from a dynasty perspective. Even though we have some of the concerns about maybe him long-term, running back 4 in ADP this year for Derrick Henry, 12 in RDP. So there's a big split there. Again, I have concerns sort of long-term, but listen, if you get a top 6 to 8 finish out of a guy sort of in the teens at running back, like, you're already ahead. So that's sort of my thought there. Like that almost pays off that cost. As crazy as that sounds, like that's a plus EV outcome for you there. I'm interested at that cost. Again, I think taking, you know, I'd much rather go Aaron Jones later on. But if you're sort of thinking about trading in that range, like I think there's guys in that range that may be accessible if you're trying to make a wide receiver to running back move in a way that hasn't really been in prior years. Julius Chestnut is 129 in underdog ADP. Again, I record this the night after, a couple hours after the game has ended with him. And he is going to go up almost assuredly. He's at 129, and that could cut in half. Just by way of reference, Haskins was at 71. So I think that could cut substantially closer to where Haskins is. Julius Chestnut, 92 in RDP, 25th, 26th round in that range. If I'm interested in that cost, if you're doing startup drafts like soon, he might go up 3, 4, 5 rounds, something like that. So I think once you get into the 20s, you're fine probably pressing that button. Again, you're just taking a lot of shots there. I think that's fine. Haskins probably going to slide a little bit would be my hunch. He's at 71 in terms of ADP this year, 58 in terms of our real draft position, 43 and 48 respectively for Woods and Burks in terms of ADP this year, 60 for Woods, 25 for Burks in terms of real draft position. I'm out on Burks at that cost. I mean, Woods is interesting. And again, he's one that if things sort of break right for Tennessee where they have to throw it a bit more, he's one that I think could benefit. Again, the same with Hooper, 24th in terms of underdog, 26th in terms of RDP. So a little bit of value, but that's not really a huge difference. I'm interested at that cost because I do think he can outperform. Like there's a clear case that he could outperform that. So yes, that'll pretty much do it for the show. Again, there's some different profiles in here that I think are interesting. So I could kind of go on about this one a little bit more than maybe some of the other teams. So we're going to transfer here to the AFC West, and then we'll harken back to the team Cleveland that still is figuring out their quarterback situation. So we'll have all that covered here for you. Get some value stuff coming up as well. Super excited about all the content. Again, have a good Friday. Continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.